two kinds of book readers. Those who read their books from the start to the end, and those who check the end pages first to ensure that all ends well. And I must admit, I did the latter quite a few times in the past, until I realized trashy books always end well. And in good books, it actually doesn't matter that much. So I stopped. But reading a really well-known Bible passage like today's leaves most of us here in the position of someone who has already read the end. We all know of Paul. We all know he was one of Christianity's greatest teachers. We all know he had a miraculous conversion, so much so that from Saul to Paul has become a figure of speech in our language. And preparing a sermon means exploring the context. That means, again, knowing how it all ends. So reading today's passage, either from the point of the curious reader, or the reader who knows already too much, or indeed from the point of the conscientious preacher, it is really hard to approach it without the knowledge of all ending well. Paul was utterly convinced of Christ afterwards, and seems to have fallen out of these 3 days with a fairly well-formed theology. He went about preaching and teaching pretty much immediately. And there are no specific crises of faith mentioned for Paul. There are for Peter, for example. And so it becomes very easy to move across this short passage and pass it by. The 3 days of blindness, what does it matter in the large scheme? Incidentally, Paul retells the story a few times. And on two occasions in Acts and in Galatians, when he tells it first to the Roman governor and to the Jewish king, and then second in Galatians to the church in Galatia, he glosses over the blindness entirely. And on all occasions, he glosses over the 3 days. So do these days really not matter, or did they only matter by way of result? What was it to live through these days? Every so often one gets those sermons which speak about joy and suffering. And most of us who have suffered will know it is not joy. Not at the time, and not even in hindsight. Even if we appreciate, in hindsight, the benefits of a bad patch. And so I want us to look at these 3 days and see if there's anything useful we can draw from them, trying to ignore the hindsight as much as possible. And so, first of all, what do we actually know out of the text or out of the retellings of Paul as a fact? We do know that Paul was blind following the encounter on the road. We knew that he prayed, and we knew that he fasted, quite drastically so. And we know also that Christ spoke eventually to him. At the very least, we know that he was told that Ananias would help him. On other accounts, the other accounts attribute Ananias' message to Christ himself. So the message which was given to Ananias, that Christ, Paul tells that this was given to him by Christ. And then there are hints across the letters that he has received all that he knows from Christ himself. So we don't really know to which extent Christ spoke to him within these 3 days and when this actually happened. Beginning, the end, the middle, all across. But reading the story, indeed any story like this from the back and from the outcome, doesn't help us an awful lot when we want to look into it, when we look at it in the light of our own patches of misery, of blindness, and of hopelessness. In fact, often enough, stories with good endings tend to push those without such, or those who are waiting, into deeper pits of despair. Reading Joseph's from the Old Testament, or Peter's respective stories of miraculous freedom from false imprisonment, doesn't guarantee freedom when we are in prison. Reading Paul's eventual healing from blindness doesn't guarantee us healing from our illnesses and our disabilities. Seeing that Hannah and Sarah got babies late in life doesn't guarantee fertility to those of us who suffer from childlessness. Reading Jonah's story of being spat out by the whale doesn't guarantee being spat out to any other victims of very large fish. summarize and generalize, hoping for a good ending because someone else had one. While we are generally suffering, it's a really difficult act to maintain. It actually doesn't work for any necessity in the sense of making us calm and collected and happy while we're waiting and suffering. Because basically, every good ending we can, which we know of, we can cite a fair few other bad ones, sometimes dozens of them, in our own experience and even in the Bible. For the ultimate shocker, read Judges 19 and compare it to Genesis 19. It's still a disastrous counterfoil for anyone who looks at a good ending when a rabid horde of murderers and rapists is circling your house. So, the outcome of some biblical heroes, including here now Paul, may not help us an awful lot when we are stuck ourselves in our own period of misery. There's a set of books which I've keep coming back in my life. It's two autobiographies of an American Polish Jesuit priest, Walter Zizek. Zizek had a really fascinating life. As a priest in the 1930s, he volunteered to go into the Soviet Union as a young man. And he wanted to provide comfort to the faithful there. He succeeded of sorts. Thanks to the Soviet Union conquering the corner of Poland where he was working and taking him as forced laborer into the Ural Mountains. There he was arrested and then imprisoned as a spy for the Vatican. And yet, following fairly grueling interrogations where he was tortured, he finally collapsed and he signed a confession of several hundred pages of all his supposed bad deeds as a spy for the Vatican. And that seemed to him, at the time, really the end of it, and of himself. And as a quote I put up out of one of his two books, "Now with a sudden and almost blinding clarity and simplicity, I realized that I had been trying to do something with my own will and intellect that was at once too much and mostly all wrong. God's will was not hidden somewhere out there in the situations in which I found myself. The situations themselves were his will for me. What he wanted from me was to accept these situations as from his hands, to let go of the reins and place myself entirely at his disposal." Zizek marks this moment in hindsight as the moment of his actual conversion, at the dropping of all his resistance against Christ and the moment of acceptance that he was not just willing to do as Christ wants him to do, but much more importantly, willing to be where Christ wants him to be. Even here, now in the prison of the KGB, in solitary confinement, and not a few more years after this episode. And then later, for about 10 years in the camp in Siberia. And then afterwards, in banishment in some Siberian backwater. Not looking for when it would end, but looking to be and act as a believer right now and right here, where he was, even in this miserable situation. And I put up a second quote, which I'm not going to read, from C.S. Lewis, less dramatic, but similar to in point. On some level, that isn't terribly comforting. In fact, it's probably anything but. There's no promise of resolution and no everlasting happiness. But in other ways, it is actually very, very realistic. Many of our own illnesses do not end miraculously. Our children can cause anxiety for most of our lives. Our workplaces might be lastingly difficult. For every Paul getting healed from blindness, every Peter and Joseph ending their prison time on a high note, every Hannah and Sarah looking at their baby after years of infertility, every daughter of Lot who was saved by angels, there are dozens and dozens of us who see nothing of these miraculous resolutions. And yet, we're not left alone by God. There's a psalm which I think might be useful here to look at. Of course, we've had dozens of psalms which deal with waiting and misery, but I really like this one because of its simplicity. There are no enemies getting smashed, no miraculous cues are looked back upon, and yet in the psalm there's comfort. I'm going to read it. That's from the NASB. "The Song of Ascents of David. Lord, my heart is not lifted up, My eyes are not raised too high. I don't occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. But I have calmed and quietened my soul, like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child is my soul within me. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. The easy comfort of mom's milk is gone. The psalmist is a child weaned. The great hopes and the grand schemes are dismissed. The psalmist knows they're not for him to ponder. But despite this, a calm has settled. The hope on the Lord remains. It has become a new focal point. The weaned baby is in his arms, utterly dependent and safe. For me, this is the faith I have seen in some of my brothers and sisters among the refugees in Greece, with years of really no earthly hope and no resolution, and with uncertainty and inability to do even the most basic provisioning and building of a normal life, with separation from family and else in the country, which gives them very little respect. And yet to rely on Christ and to serve him with conviction, maybe even with joy, while possibly being quite depressed. And that brings us back to Paul. Of course, this happy ending, which I just spoke of, healed and liberated and turned an apostle suddenly, wasn't a happy ending at all. And he's told so much here and now. He will suffer much for my name, is what Ananias is told, and Paul the same. In many ways, despite the immediate resolution, Paul went through plenty of struggles and difficulties, lengthy imprisonment, and likely ended up as a martyr. What does he himself has to say about this? In Philippians 4 is a passage, "For I have learned, in whatever situation I am, to be content. I know how to be brought low, and know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all these things through him, Christ, who strengthens me." And I think this is the clue, which I think can help us, irrespective of us feeling heroic in our faith, or much more likely, fairly humdrum, but experiencing our own 3 days of misery, or rather longer, often enough. Paul was in these 3 days in the hand of Christ. He experienced Christ up close, as king, but loving, challenging, but kind. He experienced him in a miserable and utterly dependent position, where everything that meant something for him up to this point suddenly stood up as useless and irrelevant. And yet he learned a new and lasting joy. He learned a new order of values, and a new way of accounting in these 3 days. In another place, Paul explains that he saw suddenly all his previous achievements as dross. Just Christ mattered to him now. And I think we won't take anything from these 3 days of blindness as directly applicable on our own days of difficulty, even if there is no sudden and miraculous end in healing. Then I think it is in this paring down of the valueless, and the realization of what really matters. New values and new accounting. And maybe in this lies the real healing resolution for us, just as it is the real resolution of healing for Paul. We could actually shake off what didn't matter and concentrate from now on Christ alone. This evaluation of our lives is always painful, but is also extremely joyful in its result. I want to conclude on a personal note. The story we just read was really the story which started my own life with Christ many years ago, and is therefore always a bit of a special one to me. What struck me then, despite the shock and the suddenness of the vision which really shook Paul to the core, Christ did not abuse Paul, but he allowed him to become what he was really meant to be like. I had then, when I looked at the time, at the vision of this Paul being a little bit like a broken and poorly glued back together vase, with bits sticking in the wrong way together and gaps left and right and the whole thing looking distorted. And then Christ taking him apart once again at the true seams and reassembling him carefully, painstakingly, until all actually fitted and was smooth, and was right, and was straight. And suddenly the intended glory of Paul and his personality could shine. And that's what Christ did to Paul in these days. What Christ did to Paul in these days, and that is what became important to me out of that story that I read the first time, and still is. On this, I want to thank you and say, hand over back for prayer.
Thank you very much for that.